We're here at the podcast today with Justin Elliott, whose latest story with Mark Mazzetti of the New York Times is about a very unusual subject, the infiltration of video games by American and British intelligence. Welcome, Justin.
Good to be here.
So, Justin, tell us a little bit about this story. How did we get onto it in the first place?
So the core of the story is based on documents that were part of the trove that were taken by Edward Snowden, the former NSA contractor that we now have access to. These documents detail both activities by the NSA and the NSA's British counterpart, GCHQ, which is a close partner of the American agency.
Now, why in the world would intelligence officers who are worried about terrorism and nuclear proliferation, all these kind of scary things, why would they venture into these games like World of Warcraft? What's in it for them?
I think there are basically two reasons why they got interested. And this really started sort of in the middle, latter part of the last decade, when these games like Second Life and World of Warcraft began to experience explosive popularity. You saw millions of people playing these games around the world. Now that number is in the tens of millions. The agency started to look at these games and worry first that they could be used as communications platforms for terrorists or criminals. And second, because so many people play these games, they saw the games as potential sources of intelligence. You know, people are spending many hours a day in the game sometimes. They're communicating, they're making friends and creating relationships, and their social networks. And some of those people, it actually goes into it in some of these documents, they talk about there are Iranian nuclear engineers and embassy drivers and a whole range of people who would be sort of traditional intelligence targets in the real world may be playing these games.
Well, that sounds plausible. I mean, is there any evidence in the documents that any of this has led anywhere, that it's actually resulted in any intelligence coups or recruitments?
There's only one actually specific example in the documents of an operation that gets into any kind of detail. And this involved GCHQ in the 2008-2009 period. And the documents describe GCHQ going into Second Life, actually finding an informant who gave them useful information about a criminal ring, not a terrorist group, but a criminal ring that was selling stolen credit card information. And GCHQ was helping the London police on this. That's obviously a far cry than the speculation early on that terrorists might try to plot attacks in these games. There's no evidence in the documents that terrorists have ever used the games to communicate or plan attacks. I also spoke with probably 10 or 15 people, both in the games industry, in the national security area, to see if anyone had ever heard of this happening, and no one has. It's important to note that that doesn't mean it hasn't happened. There's just no sort of public examples of it. And there's no reason why terrorists couldn't communicate in these games. You can chat, you can talk, but we don't know of it happening.
Now, one funny thing your story points out, it's kind of a spy versus spy thing. It sounds like all kinds of intelligence agencies from around the world are masquerading in these games, and they're actually bumping into each other.
Right, exactly. I mean, one of the most remarkable things in the documents is this section where they talk about CIA, FBI, defense intelligence all being inside Second Life, and it's an NSA document. They talk about the need for a quote-unquote deconfliction group to solve any potential redundancies because there were so many spies operating in Second Life at that time.
Well, the whole thing seems a little nutty, doesn't it? I mean, is this a group of people who just have too much time and money on their hands?
I think this is part of a pattern that you see with all of these NSA documents. They want to be up on the latest thing. You know, the information technology sector is changing at a pretty rapid rate. So they see the rise of, you know, whether it's cell phones or a new type of email or a new type of encryption, or in this case, people flocking to these, they're known as massively multiplayer online games, and they want to be in it. And so that's really the mindset that I think is on display here. They see these people going there, so they start doing a couple of things, actually, I should note. Not only some of these intelligence agencies operating in the games as sort of digital avatars, they were also vacuuming up communications data related to the games.
Well, let's unpack that a little bit. So I'm visualizing a game, I don't know, Second Life, where I have an identity. What's an avatar?
So an avatar, it can be anything you want, actually. It can be a sexier version of yourself, a muscle man, not to deride your physique, but often it's sort of a scantily clad man or woman. It could be an animal. It could be an alien. It can be literally anything you want. And then in Second Life, you just sort of walk around, talk to people, explore different locations, and you can talk either by text chat or actually by voice.
Now, how do the spies know who's who of these avatars? How do you know when you're dealing with an Iranian nuclear engineer versus just some guy who works in the market in Iran?
Right, and it's a really good question, and actually it goes even beyond that. How do you know it's an Iranian citizen and not an American citizen? And you actually bump up into some legal questions here, because depending on the agency, there are various restrictions and laws about intelligence gathering involving Americans, and the documents don't provide enough detail about what exactly the intelligence agencies were getting and whether it involved American communications. But if it did involve American communications, you know, we think that raises real privacy issues and potential legal issues about how that data was handled.
Now, you say they're also vacuuming up communications data. So what does that mean? What are they getting?
Well, to give an example, and this is actually on the British side of it, GCHQ, which is Britain's NSA, which works very closely with the NSA, did an experiment to get Second Life data. We're not entirely sure how they were getting it. It seems like it may have been through sort of their general internet tapping, and they were filtering out the Second Life data. And they, one of the documents says that they got, I think it was around 170,000 lines of data, which seems to correspond to 170,000 sort of message lines over a 3-day period. So they seem to just be wanting to get everything. And then they were going to do analyses on it to sort of do social network mapping to see how people were interacting with each other in these games. Again, not clear why that was useful or if it was at all sort of elucidating for the agency.
Well, one sort of sees in the movies at this point, maybe it's not accurate, that terrorists increasingly use couriers and they don't want to do anything online. So why in the world would they want to be in a kind of wide open game where everything access is open to everybody? It seems an odd thing, doesn't it?
Right. I mean, if you're a person, including a terrorist, who's worried about privacy of your communications, I would not recommend going into World of Warcraft or Second Life and starting to talk about sensitive material. The companies say in their terms of use that they reserve the right to log everything you do and say in the games, and that they are willing to share with law enforcement with a warrant. You know, we should say that Blizzard, the company that makes World of Warcraft, said that they told us that they had no idea that this was going on, and if it was going on, it was without their permission. But these are not the most secure communications channels, and that may be why there are no known cases of these games being used for nefarious ends.
Final question. It seems from what I can know as a parent, and I think this is fairly clear from the marketing data on the games, that these things are played a lot by kids. In fact, some, in many cases, teenagers under 18. How in the world would the intelligence agencies be sure they weren't chatting up or trying to recruit some 14-year-old?
Again, very good question. We don't know whether, there's no mention in the documents of sensitivities around children or ways that they were trying to avoid getting data from people under 18, but you're certainly right that a lot of people under 18 and a lot of people in their 20s and 30s spend a lot of time in these games. One thing that I found in the course of my reporting that I found really interesting was it was a survey from this period when the games were getting very popular that found something around 30% of people who played these games and responded in this survey by an academic researcher said that they had shared personal information or secrets with their friends within the game that they had never shared with their friends in the real world, which gives you a sense of when you're really into these games and you're spending dozens of hours a week in them, this really is your world. You have a lot of private communications happening in these games. So I think we can all have sort of a few laughs about this, but for some people, these games really can function as sort of private spaces, which is why I think, in part, the documents raise questions about privacy and legality of what the agencies were doing.
Justin Elliott, continuing the ProPublica Guardian New York Times collaboration on the Snowden NSA and GCHQ documents, thank you very much. Certainly one of the more fascinating stories to emerge yet.
Thanks a lot.